Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I know I say that every week, but I genuinely hope this week is okay, especially if you've got an anniversary coming up. It sounds like, do you remember they used to like shout out for birthdays and things? Like, oh, we've got a birthday coming up. But in the club, in our world, we say, I hope if you've got an anniversary this week, it's okay. There's some very sweet tweets this week. Do follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. People having their first year anniversaries and going to the beach and having G&Ts and going for walks and tweeting about it. And I always try and retweet those things. So if you are looking for other people going through the same experience, there's been some just lovely people helping each other on Twitter. So it's just really, thank you if you are helping other people. It's so nice to see that. It's a good thing about social media that we can all find each other and help each other. Do follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The other thing I have to tell you, which you're probably not even listening to this bit, but if you are, Griefcast has been nominated for a Chortle Award for Best Podcast, which is really exciting. Chortle is a very massive sort of comedy website, which if you're not in comedy, you might not have heard of, but it's very huge in the comedy industry. And they have an award ceremony every year, and they have Best Comedians Podcast. And we're up against ridiculous, ridiculous talent. So we're up against Adam Buxton, Guilty Feminist, All Killer No Filler with Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Rachel Fairbairn. So we're up against incredible other comedy podcasts, so you know, who knows. But if you are enjoying the show, please do go to chortle.co.uk and you can vote. You think you might have to give your email or something, but they don't really contact you, so it's okay. That would be hugely appreciated. Thank you. This week's guest is the incredible actor, comedian and writer Brona C. Titley. You may have seen Brona in The Reluctant Landlord, Ramesh's sitcom on Sky One, or on Woman on the Verge. She also writes for some incredible people. She writes a lot for Tracy Ullman. She wrote for Tracy Breaks the News. She's written for The Last Leg and Mash Report. And yeah, she's an incredibly funny lady who I love very, very dearly. Brona came in to talk to me about her friend Kira, who died when she was in her early 20s. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here with comedy writer and actor, Brona C. Titley. Hello.
Hello, Carriad. There you are. It's yourself.
I know, Brona. I feel like we've already had quite a long chat.
We've travelled quite far since we bumped into each other on the tube a little while ago. I feel like we've covered a lot of topics.
Yeah. And Oh, there's so much I want to ask you, but I'm still reeling from the fact that we both don't like coffee.
But we love to smell it.
Love to smell it. We've never met anyone with that same situation.
And we seem to play out the same moment around friends who get delicious smelling coffees where we ask to smell it. Oh, they offer it, you know, for us to taste it. We say, no, I don't drink it. I just like the smell.
I just love the smell. Do you ever just sometimes take the, you know, if you have coffee, proper coffee beans, just take the tin lid and smell the tin as well?
No, and if you do that, you actually probably need a bit of help. I thought we had a lot in common. It was quite normal, but actually you crossed the line.
I crossed the line, didn't I? Bryn, how did you get into comedy writing? Because you've written for so many like amazing shows, haven't
you? Thank you. I did write comedy in university, and I had always kind of written as a kid and stuff. Then straight after university, I went to drama school and came over here to the London. And after drama school, came out and sort of immediately assumed that I would instantly get cast in as anything I wanted, from the ingenue to Lady Macbeth to, you know, an old man. All the roles I'd been playing at drama school, I was like, well, the world can't wait to cast me in all those disparate roles. But found that actually there's not that many exciting comedy roles, and decided to start writing some for myself. So after Lambda, I came out and started writing a bit of comedy, and then segued into television from that. I won a writing award, which helped. That was a good launching pad. Yeah. That was the BAFTA Rockliffe New Comedy Award.
Yeah. Which Kaylee Llewellyn,
won the year before me or after me. There was a year between us. But BAFTA were so supportive. They were sort of like, if there's anyone you want to meet in the industry, tell us and we'll introduce you. And I don't think they expected me to be like, here is a list of 5,000 people. Please tell them Brona would like to see them for a cup of tea. And so I started to get jobs that way, and then just became kind of like joke writer, sketch writer, sitcom writer, like jack of all trades kind of situation.
Which, we talked about on the show before, like people, I don't think sometimes people realise there is sometimes like a team of people doing things, you know, like gagging stuff up, providing jokes for people, like, and that's your job. It's like, how can we make this more funny, please? And like a bunch of people are like, we can.
And it's sort of, it's a weird place to be, because I mean, I'm credited on all these shows. Sometimes you're credited as a writer, sometimes you're given a sort of slightly more mysterious credit, because they don't want it to look like there's, you know, 15 writers on the show. But you also don't want to break the bubble of the people who love the show. So when you say, oh, I'm a comedy writer, I write for this or that, and they go, oh, I thought those people are coming up with that in the moment. Of course, there's a huge element of that. But then there also is some, you know,
some written stuff.
Especially if they're recording two shows back to back, or if they're doing a 5-hour record and they're covering 10 topics. So they do need people, you know, comedy writers to...
Yeah, like more brains to be like, oh, I've got a brain over here.
And I have two brains, which actually is... Which is handy.
That is so handy.
For the situation. And also it was a perfect accompaniment to acting then. And then also kind of fed, so I would write for shows and then be like, oh, you know who's a classically trained, amazing actress? This guy. And then sort of trick them into casting me in the shows then as well. So the two things
that's
kind of
smart.
Go,
that's so kind of go smart, hand in Bryna. Hand.
Well, I have two brains. I mean, we did.
Yeah, yeah. We did establish that.
Listen, Carrie.
Sorry, I'm just not a good listener. That's so smart, though, to be like... Yeah, I've written a... Or also, especially if you're writing on such a show and you can be like, oh, there's this really part for like a Irish lady with blonde hair.
Yeah.
I don't know, who could we... I guess I could do it. But yeah, why
now,
not?
Now, when I am writing original scripts, I do tend to get like 5'2", blonde, blue eyes, busty. Get really down in there, make sure there's no way they could possibly cast...
No one else.
Literally anybody else.
Everyone's like, who could possibly do this?
It's from the postcode of Dublin 11, has been in London for a decade.
Her accent's Dublin, but she's been in London 10 years and she went to drama school, so it's really specific.
So she's she's easy to understand. She articulates.
She's really breathing from her diaphragm all the time. Oh, that's significant to us. Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, you have had an incredible career, but obviously that's not why we're here today to talk. I'm sorry, Bryna. I'm sorry. We're not here to do This Is Your Life.
God, I really enjoyed it there for a minute.
Oh, sorry. You have to go on a different comedy.
A different journey.
A comedy podcast.
Yes.
Who are we remembering today?
No one at all. I just really wanted to... just really wanted... A big fan of the podcast. Thought I'd come in for a chat.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Someone... Oh. Because you were one of the funniest people I know. I should have started with that. That one, I was at a party with you very recently. Sorry, and it really stuck in my head as such a funny thing to do.
Oh, God, what
that
did
you
I
opened
do?
The fridge and like something fell outside. You went, sorry, I've never used a fridge before. And I laughed so much. And I literally, like a child, thought, Rona's funny.
Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah, I don't really remember funny. That. I must write that down and tweet it later.
Yeah, it was really funny. Anyway.
No, but I do want to answer your original question. Yeah. We are remembering my dear best and oldest friend from childhood, Kira Jean Geraghty, who died suddenly when she was 25.
So Kira, was she? Did you just know as Kira or Kira Jean? Kira Jean's a lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it is lovely. Well, I knew her pretty much. We met when we were, well, when she was 12, I was a bit younger, and you know, we were extremely close until she passed away. And I had always kind of known her as Kira. But then in the last kind of year or two of her life, she slipped in that other people called her CJ. And then it became a thing. And then weirdly, after she died, I started to refer to her as CJ more. Like, it became like a little nickname that I used that I had never kind of called her in life, which is strange. But her name was Kira, and it was spelled C-I-A-R-R-A.
So see, that's an extra why I was like, where's the C coming from? Because I'm hearing K-E-R-I-A.
Yeah, sure.
And then when you said C, I was like, you guys, there's, why have you picked CJ?
No, I know Irish people have trouble spelling things, Brona, tend to put it. But
so she was a kid. Wow, that is. Yeah. Because we were just discussing how our names are easy to spell. That's a tough one.
Yes.
Say that again for me, C?
C-I-A-R-R-A. Wow. And my middle name, which the C stands for, is very hard to say. That's C-A-O-I-M-H-E.
Oh,
I
yeah,
don't
what
know if
is
that makes any sense to you,
Carrie. It does. I've seen it written down, but what is it?
Go on, try.
Chlamydia.
It's chlamydia.
Oh,
yeah.
Chlamydia. I actually thought I was
right. Brona Chlamydia Tiddly.
Chlamydia.
It's Quiver.
Quiver.
Yeah, so nothing like it's spelled. So Kira was always Kira to me, and then became CJ sort of, yeah.
So how did you guys meet? Like,
I went to this school down the road from me for a year and then promptly changed, secondary school, and then changed to a different secondary school. And Kira was in that school. And the first one, the one
the
I only went
one.
To for
oh,
a year.
Okay.
So we actually went to school together for a year. And then I left, but we remained really good friends. And that was why our friendship groups were never, she was never part of a group. She was mine.
Yeah.
I owned her. She was my, she was my very special friend that didn't belong in other, we weren't in each other's kind of social groups.
And that's quite nice because you can moan about, because one of my oldest friends went to a different secondary school.
Yeah.
So we could moan about each other's group.
Yes.
But it's not like Zoe's going to tell Sarah that I said that. It's like, no, it's dumb.
Yeah,
like,
and
she's
there's
over
also
there.
Different gigs to go to and different adventures and stuff. So I remember meeting her, which I don't know that I have a memory of like all of my friends that you meet at that time, but I remember. So she was very tiny. I mean, I'm quite small. I'm not a tall lady. I think Kira might have been around my height when we were grown-ups, or maybe she was a little bit smaller. But my memory of her then was that she was just the tiniest little elf you'd ever seen. And she had long, curly brown hair, and she kind of bounced up to me. And when we said hello, she was extremely warm and friendly and chatty. That was just her overriding characteristic her whole life. And one of the first things she told me was that she had a little sister who was 3 and who lived in Australia, because her, you know, her mum and dad had separated. Her dad had moved to Australia and he had other kids there.
Right.
And I had never in my life heard anything as exotic as having a little sister in Australia. Like, I just thought, and her sister was called Bronte.
Wow.
And she showed me a photo of her, and she was like blonde and angelic looking. And I was like, this girl has a sister in Australia. Like, have you ever heard anything like that?
She's from Hollywood. It must be. She's from the movies. Wow.
We became friends then. We're very close friends that year. And then when I moved schools, our friendship transitioned to our parents' landlines. And it
those
was
days.
A very landline-based friendship. We would spend a lot of time together. We would meet up a lot. But our early teens, my memories of Kira was just like long conversations on the phone. And we were neither of us short of a few words.
But your you're from a big family, right?
Yeah.
So was that quite stressful, the old phone? Because me and my brother had to share that landline. And kids today do not understand. And it was stressful just me and my brother because he'd pick up the phone. Get off the phone. I'm talking to Susanna. Leave me alone.
Yeah. Like, when your politics of it. Because there's seven of us. So I have two brothers, two sisters. My parents were in the house. God. And I remember when call waiting came in. That was the worst thing that had ever happened. Because then you were supposed to get off the phone. And you would ignore it. But then your mum would be like, did you ignore the bins? Did you ignore
Yeah, because he said, I've just had Auntie Sheila on the phone. She says she's been trying to ring for 2 hours. Like, oh, did she? Oh.
And actually, Kira came from a single parent family and she was her mum's only child. Oh. So she had sole ownership over that landline.
Wow.
So yeah, there probably was some dramatic get off the phones.
So your friends were this early teenage bit and then up to that. So what happened? Like, so as you were growing up, did you sort of, you know, turn into different people, or you just sort of maintained that friendship?
I think we were always kind of different people. We had very similar sort of energies and hearts, but then our friendships groups were different, our interests were different. Kira went on to become a carer. She worked she worked with adults with autism, and she also spent some time in Australia. I think when she was around 17 she went for a year, and then again in her early to mid-20s, she went for a long period of time. So there definitely was our late teens. There was a period where we never had a falling out, but we definitely fell out of touch a bit. We didn't spend as much time together as we had used, you know, as we had.
Well, you get that massive change, don't you, from, like, you said, that intense, I'm going to say from my point of view, but that intense female friendship when you're like 12 to 14.
Yes.
When you do literally.
So formative.
You just know everything about them.
I have a memory of Kira telling me what an erection was. Like, I knew the basics of how heterosexual sex worked.
Wow.
But I didn't know that there was. I just thought the penis can be, you know, put in at any time.
Any time. And she set you
and
straight.
She really, literally. She set me boner straight. she really talked me through that. Yeah, there was so much of that formative stuff. You know, first kisses and boyfriends and everything in between. And so we did lose touch a little bit for maybe around a period of a year, 2 years, but we had this kind of grand reunion, which I also have such a strong memory of, because it was in the summer and I was 18 or 19, so it was maybe it had been a year or a year and a half when we hadn't seen, we just had, you know, fallen out of touch a bit, and we had been so close. And it was in Edinburgh, it was at the Edinburgh Festival.
Wow.
And she was coming down the steps of the Gilded Balloon TV and I was going up them, and there was this moment of, like, the world stopped at you. And I was like, Kira? She's like, Brona? And we, like, fell into each other's arms. We're so excited. Went for a cup of tea or a plate of lettuce. I can't remember what we had. Presume it was one of those two things.
Yeah.
And then we were, like, extremely close until the day she died. And, you know, and afterwards.
So you kind of found each other again at Edinburgh.
Yeah, and it was beautiful. And then our friendship sort of then was a bit different because we were kind of suddenly adults. And
You have to redefine it a bit, don't you? Because, like, I can't tell you everything and ring you at 7 o'clock at night until tea's ready. So, like, we have to redefine. Because I've had that my oldest friend, Zoe, I've known all my life. Like, we've stayed friends, but each time there's been like, now we have to do this, don't we?
Yeah, and it was different actually because Kira was working around the time that I was in university in Trinity in Dublin, and she occupied this new role of taking care of me a bit. Like, she was always quite mothery, but I'd be like that to a certain extent with people too. But, like, there was one thing she used to do. So, you know, had a mobile phone that you could only top up with credit, and of course I was a student and I just never bloody had credit, and I think our lives revolved around having credit at that point in time.
I remember that.
Like, if you made a movie of my university years, it would have been I'm running out of credit.
God, yeah, and you used to get those texts and you've got no credit and you'd be like, can I borrow your phone to text?
And like someone would be like, hey, how come you haven't texted me back? And you're like, I'm sorry, I have no credit. It was just like a huge part of our lives. But Kira would do this thing where she would get paid, go to the bank link, which is like the cash point in Dublin, and you could top up people's mobile phones from the cash point. So she would get paid, go to the bank link, key in my mobile number, and I'd be, you know, somewhere in university, and I would suddenly have credit on my phone. And I think I eventually did find, you know, realize it was her when she, you know, while she was still alive. And because sometimes she would maybe tell me that she had done it or whatever. But I also remember telling her ex-boyfriend about it. like years after she died. And he was like, oh yeah, I mean, she had she had six phone numbers in her wallet, and she would do it for, you know, her, you know, like a, you know, friend of her uncle's, and like,
oh,
you.
God.
It was just like, that was such a big part of who she was, just like,
yeah,
kindness.
That is just really kind.
Pure kind of goodness and kindness. She was like a rollicking good laugh and a drinker and a talker and a stay out all nighter. But she was just so kind and friendly and warm.
Yeah.
And
what a lovely thing to do. Yeah. So small acts of loveliness,
yes,
isn't it? Like, you,
yeah,
just don't. That means,
yeah,
so much. It's sort of like,
it's
melt
huge.
Your heart.
And actually, I think I'll always remember that, because it was sort of just so selfless. Like, there was no...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like she was making the millions. It was just that she had,
yeah,
a job and I was a student.
Yeah. So how did she die? What happened?
I took a sip of my tea there at that
Sorry,
very,
I know. And I sort of thought, can I extend the question?
No, that is the question. How did she die? So I haven't fact checked this in a long time, because, you know, it feels like a weird thing to ask Kira's mum now. But this is my understanding of the situation,
yeah,
as it happened.
Sure.
And it was so strange, Cariad, and just blew my entire world wide open, as we'll get to, I'm sure. So it was September. I had just come back. I had come back to drama school early. I was in my final year at Lambda to do an extra play before my year of plays started. And I'd been home in the summer, so I'd just seen her maybe like a week and a half previously, and we had texted, you know, a couple of days before. But she entered a radio competition to win tickets to a music festival in Ireland, Electric Picnic, which is like kind of Latitude or something.
Right. Yeah.
So she entered this radio competition. She won the tickets.
Wow.
So she won tickets to the festival that she wouldn't otherwise have gone to if she hadn't won them. And then she won two tickets. And a new friend of hers that she had just met worked near the radio station. His name was David. And so she, as a thank you for him picking them up, she sent him to pick them up. And as a thank you, took him to the festival.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then because they were going together, he gave her a lift on the back of his motorbike. And then on the way home from the festival after the weekend, the bike slipped in the rain, hit a bollard. They both flew off. He died instantly. And Kira was taken to intensive care and put on life support. And it was...
Oh, my God, like, that's such a random
set
of circumstances,
it is,
isn't it?
Like, it's probably the definition of random. But also that word doesn't even begin to cover,
yeah,
the what felt like the amount of crazy leaps,
yeah,
that had to go through in order to put her in this situation where then she was just suddenly,
God,
dead.
That's really... We talked about this on Sophie Black's episode about just how chaotic life is and,
yeah,
how we ignore it all the time.
Yeah.
But that is such a, like a textbook example.
Yeah.
If you were trying to explain to a child,
yeah,
life is actually quite chaotic.
And I think that element of it did fuck me up for a long,
yeah,
time.
Yeah, because how can you...
Yeah.
There's no safeguarding against that. Explanation of, oh, people get sick or this happens.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Like, and I'll sort of go on to then what sort of happened over the next 48 hours and her actually dying and stuff.
Yeah.
But what that randomness did and what that sort of suddenness did. So this is a person who I had seen a week and a half before.
Yeah, yeah.
I had known what felt like my entire life, was part of my heart. I had held in my arms and had a long, warm hug with, you know, a week and a half previously, and then was gone. Like, just snap, you know, snap of the fingers, gone. And I know you've talked about a sort of similar, like, tablecloth pulling out,
yeah, yeah,
feeling. But I felt a bit like my life was, I don't know, like this bell jar with a lid at the bottom. And there I was in the middle with all the people I loved, having a great time.
Yeah.
Just actually always being quite positive, thinking life was brilliant, just having a laugh, loving it. And then someone came along, whipped that lid out. Kira fell out and then closed the lid.
Oh, God.
And I was like, hang on, this is new information. Like, I didn't know that lid opened. And
God.
It's now opened and it's taken out, like, what feels like a limb, like something,
yeah,
so important to me. But now I know that lid can open Are you telling me that that can happen at any time, and any of the elements in this thing that I prize so dearly can go? And I just, for a really long time, felt like everyone I loved was about to die at any second.
Of course.
Just pure trauma.
Because, you know, that's the thing I think we find so hard to deal with, of like, when you have a shocking death, of course you then think, well, everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
Like, your brain is a very, your two brains,
yeah,
is like very quick to learn. So yeah, like you said, once your brain goes, oh, this can happen, a tangent, but like, we got mugged once.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for doing that.
Yeah. I was like, they're tiny Irish ladies. But that really made me realise, oh, anyone can just take what they want.
Oh, gosh.
But it was a really like...
visceral
again
feeling.
That thing of going, oh, I see, I thought this,
yeah,
but it's not true. What I thought was what I thought, because I didn't realize that if someone wants your stuff, they can just literally take it. They don't have to really do anything. They can just say, that's mine. And the same thing, like a motorbike can crash and just take, but it sounds so simple, but of course your human brain is like, no, that's not how this world works, because we don't want to believe that's how it works.
And also I don't think we could get through the day, like that thing of your brain, you know, taking all the shortcuts with its neural pathways, because actually if we took in all of, you know, if we took in all of the new information new every single time, it would sort of, we would explode, I think, is the technical term. I'm also a scientist.
But I'm not surprised that you felt that. Because it's so shocking.
It was so shocking. And so...
especially someone young.
Yeah.
You know, they're young. And like you said, they're full of life. Nobody's planning anything like that for them.
It was also the period of our lives, I suppose, where we had a presumed future.
Yeah.
You know, I was about to leave drama school, start my career. Kira, I think, was actually at the time talking about maybe going back to study. She was maybe thinking of going back to do another course. We had had a long conversation about that a couple of weeks previously. She was talking about, you know, getting another visa to go to Australia. Just like all the admin of life.
Yeah.
That actually a conversation I will probably have today with somebody.
Yeah.
Just in the absolute unshakable belief that your life will continue. But anyway, so how it transpired to me was, I was, as I say, in London rehearsing for this play. And I was out that evening with some friends. It was a friend's birthday, so we were going for dinner in Soho. And I got a phone call from Kira's uncle. And Kira's uncle was her mum's youngest brother, so not that much older than Kira. And they were kind of like, you know, like an honorary brother. They were very close. And Kira had been over, he lives in London or just outside. Kira had been over to visit me and him at the end of the previous term. And she reintroduced me to him because I hadn't seen him since I was a kid. And we all went out on this night out where we just drank until 4 or 5 in the morning, properly bonded for life. And, you know, and I'm so grateful that we had that night because of the support that then we were then able to give each other a bit later on. So anyway, he phoned me in the middle of this dinner. And so I saw his name coming up and I was like, oh, there's Ollie. And I'm out drinking in Soho where he's clearly wants a drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Answered the phone. I think I was like, there you are, you bollocks. How are you? You know, I think I was genuinely like that thing of starting the call with pure banter. And he was like, oh, yeah, you're right. How are you? Oh, yeah. So, you know, Kira's had an accident. And I was like, my brain was just like broken arm. Like, and I was like, oh, God love her. That's all, you know, that poor thing. How is she? And he sort of was like, yeah, no, you know, tried to talk about it a bit. And then there was something in his tone that suggested to me that this might be serious. So I said, I was like, is it serious? And he was like, yeah, I think it is, bro. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. So she was in hospital. She was unconscious. So I was like, I finished the phone call and I was like, well, I have to leave this party. So I said to my friend, you know, I've just had this phone call with some bad news. A friend has been in an accident. I'm sure it's not serious, but I think I should go home.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, I've had one of those phone calls. You go. And I was like, okay, he's overreacting a bit, but anyway, that's fine.
I think it's fine, weirdo.
Yeah, sorry, this is my friend. She'll be fine. So I went to get the tube home, and this is just so morbidly funny. I think it was a hot night. I was out. I was wearing like a blue, like V-neck top. I got onto the tube, and as I was getting on the tube with this like message in my brain of like, something bad has happened, and I don't know what it is yet. This group of lads walked past me, and one of them was like, "Oh my days, you've got the biggest tits I've ever seen in my life." And I just kind of turned, like, and then my brain was like,
thanks.
Oh, this man just shouted at me about my breasts in front of this entire tube carriage. And I'm trying to compute that with the message that something terrible has happened to someone I love. So I'm just going to sit here blankly on the tube, not reacting to either of those things.
That did not happen. Yeah. Just as nothing has happened. Oh, and my God. Welcome to London. Welcome to London.
Yeah. So we're married now.
Rita, that's how we met.
So I went home and I was alone in, I shared with three other actresses and I was alone that evening and panic started to set in a little bit, but I'm also not a worrier. I sort of believe like, don't run to meet trouble halfway. Like I'll take it as it comes. I'm sure everything will be fine, but I needed to like direct this kind of panic somewhere. So I wrote Kira a letter. So I just sat down immediately and was like, so you've just been in some sort of accident, you big Egypt. You know, I can't wait for you to read this in 2 days when, you know, you wake up and are feeling better. Just really didn't believe that that it was physically possible for her to die.
That's really interesting though, because you are a writer, and so your brain, this is the mad thing about brains, your brain was like, you need to write this down. That's the only way I'm going to get you to sort of realise what's happening to you. Everybody reacts differently in that moment of shock, but I think that's really interesting. Your
it
brain
felt
was
like it's right, it's hard to put it. And also I was also like, look, I know you're going to be fine, babe, but just getting that news did, you know, make me realize how much I love you. And obviously I say it to you all the time, but look, I'm saying it now again here in this letter. I'm thinking of you because you're unconscious. And so I did sort of put all that stuff in, and then I lay down to go to sleep and all I could see was her face. Just like I closed my eyes and I could see her face, and I think that's when I realized. I didn't really know it, but it almost felt like a visit. Like she wasn't dead yet, she was on life support, but it felt like I knew she was going to go. So I can't quite remember if it was the next kind of 24 hours or a bit of a haze. So I don't know if it was the next day or the day after. I had been told, Ollie had been keeping me in touch. He went to Dublin. He'd been keeping in touch with me, about his sister, Kira's mum, Gráinne, and what was happening. And I think he said, we'll know at 5 if we're going to turn off the life support machine not. And that was just foreign language to my ears. It didn't make any sense. And I think I was either supposed to phone Gráinne or she was supposed to phone me when they made that decision. And they were, you know, very kind, keeping me in the loop. And so I had said, I had sent the director of this play a text the night before, which again was like, look, just a flag up. This has happened. I'm sure it's fine. And I think I'd said something like, but just so you know, in the next few days, there might be a funeral. And then I sort of saw myself write that. And I was like, Brony, you drama queen. It's not going to be a funeral. Kira can't die. Stop looking for attention. And she was a friend of mine. She had also been supportive. But so I was in rehearsals and I had said, I'm going to go take this phone call at 5 o'clock. And I think I had arranged to go to like the vice principal's office as we were rehearsing in Lambda. Yeah. And I did. And I was on the phone and I said, and Gráinne, in whatever words she used, told me that they were turning off the machines. And I think I said to her, Gráinne, have we lost her? And she said, we lost her by the side of the road, Brona. And I got off the phone quite quickly and I was alone in the office and I properly fell to the ground, like collapsed onto my knees like you do in a movie.
Yeah.
And
there's a reason they do that, because that's what happens.
Like. Yeah. And I sort of hovered above myself and observed myself do that. And part of me was like, are you just doing that because you think you're supposed to? Mm. And another part of me had just fallen to the floor. There's a few things that I remember over the next day before I get to Dublin, but I don't totally remember the sequence of events. I was in absolute shock. I mean, I definitely, you know, was crying and was upset, but I had no idea.
It's like all the pain is like over there. It's like not in your body. And so that's why like your body's crying and saying, oh, it's so sad, it's so awful. But your brain is like going, what? You don't, this didn't happen. Why are you acting like you're playing a part? And I think it's hard if you are an actor, because you sort of know what it's like to fake or play a part.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're faking, it's just you're aware that something hasn't got you yet.
Like, I think you're right.
You know, and then when you're acting and you're not in a part properly, you're like, oh yeah, I haven't got it yet. I'm saying the lines, it'll come. And when you're in shock, you're like, oh, I'm acting like I haven't got the part yet. What is happening here? It's really hard.
It was really strange. Like, because I do remember that moment. I do remember the feeling of my legs going out from under me, but also the feeling of, oh, you should fall on the floor now. Like, it was like the two things existed at the same time.
I've had that with, like, doing a huge wail of, like, pain and then being like, are you, what was that? Like, are you doing that because you're, what, like, I think it's just a part of your brain, I think, sort of stays awake and it's like, what's happening here?
That is interesting. And I did have that moment the next day. My friends and flatmates had all rallied around. So had my sister, who was helping me book a flight because I was going to go straight back to Dublin. And I think my friends left me alone for like 20 minutes, something like that, or like half an hour. One of they were like swapping shifts the next day. I don't know how it happened. But I was alone in my house and I was on all fours and I let out a guttural, like a series of guttural noises that I didn't know I could make. And then I went back to Dublin and I think family picked me up from the airport and I went straight to the funeral home where Kira was laid out, but before the removal. And then the next day was going to be the funeral. So, you know, in Ireland, we do it quite quickly. I think people are just gasping for a pint. Yeah. We need to get to the alcohol pretty fast as possible.
Let's just wait, big guys. Yeah. So did you see her laid out?
So I did, and that was another sort of curious slash morbidly funny moment because I was terrified of it. I mean, I had actually a lot of people that I knew had died up to this point. Yeah. I had lost beloved godmother, godfather, two grandparents, two mates at university. I had seen dead bodies and I wasn't far into the concept that people die.
Yeah.
But it's like you speak about the club. It's like when it's one of those inner people that make up part of you, you actually don't know what grief is until that happens.
Yeah, I think before that, it's sadness. You're like, that's sad. I can obviously empathise as a human being. That person's died and that's sad. But I feel like if you can go, that's sad, and then you turn into another room and you're like, oh, that's on, I watched that. Like, it's like you can switch it off. Whereas grief is like, I'm always sad. Like, why is it not going? Why can't I walk away from it? Why can't I not get out of the room? Like, why? And you sort of get this, because you're used to being able to go, that's sad, and now I'm okay. Like, why am I still not okay the next day, the next day, the next day?
Yeah, and I do want to talk about that, because the sort of physical onset of grief that happened a week or two later took me by surprise, and I know that that's sort of what this podcast is about.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
So you saw her body.
So I was between two minds as to whether or not I wanted to, because we had had sort of the perfect goodbye. Wow. Because I was going back to drama school for a term, so I knew I wouldn't see her for a couple of months. And so we had gone to a place in Dublin that we both loved. We had had some chips. We had had hours together. And then we had held each other like, I can't believe I'm not going to see you for a couple of months. And the warmest, longest hug. And so I was afraid of seeing someone that would look different, that would override that memory.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I decided I was going to because part of me didn't believe it. And I think I needed, I felt like I needed to see her body and I felt like I needed to see the coffin going into the ground. And so I went to the funeral home and I went in and I saw her and I was, it was awful, but also it was Kira. She didn't look scary. She looked like the person that I loved. And so I started to speak to her. And then the door opened and the people who worked in the funeral home, like, it's their job. It's their day-to-day.
Yeah.
Like, happens all the time. And I think a woman walked in, and I can't remember exactly what she said, but it was something along the lines of, where do you want me to put the wreath, Gary? I'll pop it over here. There's a pile of them in here. Okay. Yeah. And I think there's a few others coming. And I was like, I was standing by the coffin of
talking to my friend.
To my 25-year-old best friend who had died and was like, and I think I was saying, like, thank you for loving me. Like, thank you for everything you
Gary,
gave
I got
to my
so
life.
Many reefs here. Like, where should I put them?
Oh, Jesus, we're overrun with them. Oh, my God. And I was angry. I was but I was also amused because I got it. I understood.
Yeah, you're like, good timing. In the sitcom, this is hilarious.
When I do a podcast about this in 10 years, that'll be a great moment. Yeah. But right now, it's awful. So, yes, and then I went to the pub with some of her friends and her ex-boyfriend who I was friends with, and then I think the next day was the removal where Kira was in the open coffin in her house. Well, it was her granny's house, where she had spent a lot of time growing up, and which was nearer to my house than her mum's house because she was outside Dublin, her mum. And another close friend of mine, Holly, came with me to sort of hold me up.
So the removal, because I've not heard of that. So the removal is just when you go to visit. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's sometimes people do it in the funeral home. Sometimes they do it in their house. This
right,
was in
Kira's
granny's house.
And that's with
house.
The body.
That's with the body and you drink and you say goodbye and stuff. And I just wasn't in a place where I could do that.
Yeah.
I felt like I had to go and sort of be there for the family, but I couldn't take it in. And it was so tragic. It was so tragic because Kira's mum was in a state of absolute shock. And
was that her only child?
Her only child.
Oh,
and a beautiful, kind, clever, amazing woman who obviously Kira was her whole world. And she was dressed all in white. I mean, she looked beautiful. She wore white for the funeral. And then this other kind of funny exchange happened where she was telling like a neighbor who I was, and she was like, okay, Brona and Kira went to school together for a year when they were 12. And then the second half of that sentence is, and then remained best friends to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
But she kind of only said the first half. And so this neighbor was like, I are so good to come. I are so good to come. Did you come over from London? I are so good. And I was like, no, you don't understand.
No, no.
I'm not good.
I'm in the circle.
She was my sister.
I'm in the circle, yeah. Like, I'm one of the gang.
Like, this neighbor was congratulating me for turning up, like,
sure, they're only friends for a year. She's come all this way, she must be lonely in London.
Yeah, exactly.
She must have wanted a trip back home.
Oh my God. And then the next day was the funeral, and
funerals of young people are just the worst.
And just I definitely cried and was in shock, but again, just wasn't in it yet.
Yeah.
And I met Kira's dad for the first time because he had lived in Australia. He had never been to Ireland, but they had a good relationship and he knew who I was, of course. And so it was sort of beautiful to meet him, but also heartbreaking. And I think he gave a eulogy, and I think he said something along the lines that really stayed with me of how, like, when you're born, they say that you get allocated a certain amount of words to speak. And we all know that Kira, like, got double the amount of words that everybody else got. And then we went to bury her. And this was quite traumatic because my mother, father, one of my brothers, one of my sisters, and a lot of my friends had all come to the funeral to support me. And that is an Irish thing. They're sort of, they're big and you show up. They're slightly different to funerals here. And so we all piled into our cars to go and drive to the graveyard after the church. And so we found out where the graveyard was and we were going to drive there. Now, my dad was driving and he has literally the best sense of direction in the world, has never gotten lost a day in his life, except for the day of my best friend's funeral. And so we were driving around. He didn't know where he was going. Everyone in the car was getting increasingly stressed. I was in a state of absolute panic because I felt like I needed to see her buried to believe that this had happened. I couldn't fathom it happening without me. I couldn't fathom going late.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle being in a car driving around while someone put my best friend into the ground.
God.
And I just wanted to open the car door and roll out onto the motorway. Like, it was overwhelming. And as it happened, we got there on time and a lot of people had been lost because there were two graveyards by the same name or something. And we buried her, and then promptly I went back to London to go back into rehearsals for this play.
God, that must have been so hard, Brian. It's just because also I think it's hard when the death is not like in your country you're residing in, because then there is a very like people when you lose someone and you have the funeral and you go back to normal life, you always feel like, oh, the world's just carrying on.
Yeah.
But when you've had to sort of get on a plane and remove it, it's like,
yeah.
Oh, did it happen? Did I go to that? Because here in London, there's no Kira, there's no, I'm just giving my life.
So there was a few things that were extra difficult about that. And one was, you know, I'd only been away for a year and I did miss Ireland anyway.
Yeah.
And nobody in London knew Kira.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that circle of friends.
And
as
then
well.
We hadn't shared a friendship group, but I knew her mates. I knew her other close friends.
Yeah.
But we weren't like bonded together. And so, yeah. But this is sort of where like the shit hit the fan, because like I just didn't know what grief was.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that it was going to like enter my body.
Mm.
You know, so I remember just this prevailing sense for like, Kira died on the 5th of September through to the following July. So the chunk of 10 months, just not being able to function as a human being.
Yeah.
But this also, so a few things. So like a rage that I had never, ever envisaged as possible in my life. And I would be like a fairly positive, like upbeat, kind of optimist type person. And also, and wasn't a very angry person really. And also kind of was a bit snobby about anger. Like it was something felt by people who were less emotionally mature than I. Like, oh, you're angry? Sounds like you've got some stuff you need to talk about. And I didn't know that I was going to just want to scream all day, every day. I didn't know that, like, I would be shaking with anger. I would want to punch things. I would hate everybody around me. I mean, up until that point, I just thought everybody was brilliant. And then
hard.
I just hated everybody.
Yeah.
It was such a swing.
Because that's really interesting, because I was angry before my dad died. Like, I was quite a kind of, like, I think actually essentially I'm an upbeat positive person, but I thought that wasn't cool, so I kind of made myself into this like Darlene-esque Daria character. It was like, everyone's lame, everything's shit, because I grew up in London as well, and that was kind of what we were all doing. And then so I definitely had a temper on me, and so when I got the rage, I always felt like, oh God, it's just me but worse. But I think it's really interesting that you were like, I've never had this before, what the fuck is this?
Didn't know it was possible.
Yeah.
And also like had to let it out, so just became slightly different person. I don't think I went around shouting at everybody, but I definitely like would walk down the motorway that I walked between my house and drama school, and like would scream along with the cars. I would lock myself in the cubicle between classes and like just silent scream, hyperventilate, sob.
And it's hard because I bet everyone was like, "Oh, what's Brona's problem? She used to be so nice. Now she's being snappy."
I think to a certain extent, they thought I was the same, but I knew I was a husk of the, like, it was a totally different person, but then also outwardly doing a fairly half decent impression. But also I definitely isolated myself. I didn't want to be alone, and I didn't want to be with anyone.
Oh,
and
God.
There was about maybe three people I could be with. There was like a few people I had. Oh my God, the staff at Lambda were so kind to me. Just like, my physical theatre teacher would take me for walks with his son in Kew Garden, and the head of movement told me I could come to her house and just stay in the country if I needed to. And they all looked after me so much, but I just couldn't, I had this physical presence of grief. Like I had, it felt like, like a hoof belonging to like a very heavy horse was pressing on my chest.
It's a great Irish metaphor. I love it. I really love it. Yeah, I know what you mean.
So it's just a very heavy horse. And he's put his hoof there now on my chest. But I didn't, like, that's what I mean about the physical sense of it, because I suddenly had like an intense pain in my chest, like a really really painful physical yeah. presence that I never had before.
That's and what it physically hurts. I yeah. think that's a really... And
it physically hurts.
With people with heartbreak, I think people sometimes get that. Like, yeah. oh yeah, it physically hurts. But it's the same thing. Your heart is... A part of your heart is breaking.
Yeah.
And a part of your heart is... Yeah, that pain. Oh, that really... And, you know, that's the thing with grief. You still get it. It's just not as bad as that first year, I think, because you learn to sort of mend it a little bit.
Yeah.
But that pain, I know what you mean, is just like... And you're like, someone has punched me.
I couldn't believe
Someone's punched me. Why did someone punch me? Like, and there's no one to look around. So then you're angry because you're like, someone punched me, and there's no one to shout or say, don't punch me. There's just an absence of a person.
I couldn't not fathom what was happening yeah. to me. I would cry in the morning, I would cry in the evening, I would cry on lunch breaks. I was angry. I was full of rage. I wanted to hit things. I didn't like people anymore.
Yeah.
And that had sort of been my MO before. yeah. Rona gets on with people. I then had to do the final year of drama school, where you have to get your headshots done and pick and do your showcase, and it's sort of everything felt really stupid.
Yeah.
And I had never been cynical in my life before. Like the year before, if a teacher was like, now we're going to be an animal for 3 hours, I'd be like, oh cool, this will be an interesting experience, I think I'll be an owl, let's see what this is like. And I would throw, you know, and our yeah. voice teacher would be like, breathe onto the walls, and I'd be like, sure, this is an experience, maybe this is doing something for my vocal cords, let's give it a try. And then that year it was like, what is the fucking point?
Yeah.
And everyone around me was in their bubble of yeah. like, we're at drama school, this is the big, we're at our graduating year, this is the most important thing that yeah, to happen this to is us our, ever.
And this, for them, it is their biggest thing.
And I had this new information, yeah. which was, by the way, anyone you love at any point can now die in an instant.
I love it.
And there's nothing you can
like,
do about it.
It's so funny, because that's what I was like at school. So they'd be like, oh my God, this boy, and we're going to go, know. Should I wear this dress from like Kukai? I don't know. And I'd be like, you're all going to die. Like,
I know.
And it's like, there's no, you've got, it's almost like, you know, that when you come out of grief in the way that you don't come out of it, but you get better at sort of hiding that information that you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're first in it, all you want to do is scream.
Yeah.
We're all going to die. Why are we all walking around? Yeah. Everyone should just sit down where they are. And then you slowly yeah. learn, I don't need to scream in people's faces that they're going to die.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out. But that first bit when you know, like you said, that new information.
It was new information. And it's such, crucial
yeah,
as well.
It's crucial. And I think it's like coming from being like in a, you know, when we were in tribes or when we were hunter-gatherers yeah. all these years ago, if you knew that, you want to come back into your family and yeah. be like, hey guys, we're all going to die, so we need to change what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know? And then everyone's yeah. like, no, I need to practice my monologue. You're like, no. Yeah. You need to practice your death because you're going to die and everyone can die. Like,
yeah,
it's so extreme, isn't it?
And I definitely feel like there was sort of a before Brona and an after
yeah.
Brona.
I think definitely.
I think now I'm the same person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was always the same person, but I think, and I always had a decent sense of perspective, like, you know, God, we're so lucky in this country, or, you know, these countries that we live in. We're so lucky. I always had a very deep sense of perspective and gratitude. But this was so huge. And it changed everything.
Yeah. Like you said, it's new information.
Yeah.
I guess it's like, oh, you know, like the you know, when you learn as a kid, like that tastes bad. Like yeah. it changes everything. You're like, duh, okay, don't drink that thing. Like it's in. Of course, you start absorbing it into your being, like, yeah. and that physical process is your body, your muscles, and your emotions, and your brain taking in. Oh, right, people can go.
And I think I believed. I couldn't see a way where I thought I would ever be happy again.
Yes, God,
I didn't
yeah.
like. I didn't believe that I would ever be able to be happy again. I thought it was going to be something. I thought I would feel
like that.
That hoof on my chest yeah. and that rage. Until old age, yeah. if I was lucky enough to live yeah. to old age, which I might not be, because actually I was going to drop dead, because yeah. everyone, you know, because this had happened. So I didn't believe that I was ever going to be happy again. And I was able to still laugh and go out, and sometimes I would, you know, something would happen that I would enjoy, but I was carrying around this weight of it. And so something did shift. Yeah. So I think it was my birthday at the end of June. So I was like, you know, Kira had been a bit older than me, and now I was about to age
yeah.
beyond her for the first
God,
time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and you've spoken before about how Christmases, birthdays, anniversaries, they yeah. all have a different. And I was particularly, I started to think that maybe there was something wrong with me, that I was still so in grief.
Yeah, and it must be hard when she's your friend as well, because you don't have that, like,
yeah,
oh, I'm a family member. So
I think people don't understand it. So when you maybe there's a certain amount of people's imagination that can, if your sister died, they can fill that in. But if someone who felt like a sister but wasn't died, they don't. They just think it's a mate and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's.
I was really,
oh, well.
I was still really, just really quite bad, and I started to feel like maybe it shouldn't still be this bad after this time. And I was late. I was late for school that day. It was my birthday. I'd just been crying all morning, and we were in rehearsals for a final play, and so I had a voice session with the voice teacher. Another teacher had been really kind to me, and so I was just like, look, I just feel like awful, I'm just grieving so much. And she said, I think you might need to let Kira go. And I was so fucking angry with her. I thought it was like such a horrendous, insulting, horrible, insensitive thing to say. But there was also a grain of truth in it, because I couldn't put down the weight of grief, because it was like giving her up. Mm. And I didn't want to give her up. I loved her so much and she was so amazing. And so she said that to me, and I was like, okay, I'm going to explore this.
That's so kind of you, because it is helpful advice, but it does make you want to say,
I really
fuck,
hated her in the moment.
Fuck you. Yeah, because you feel like... You feel like it's up there taking your friend away.
Yeah.
Or taking what you love away. Again.
Again.
And that's what you're fucking going through.
Yeah.
But, yeah, obviously, I, as an older person who's been through grief, can understand what she was trying to say. But when you're younger, you're like, oh, you're a fucking bitch, aren't
And I
you?
Think
like,
maybe there was a more sensitive way to say it. Yeah, like, it's time to let her go. Now, shall we do some four-sided box?
But then it's funny, because I always think that the sensitive way... You might not have heard.
True.
So that's often why people try, like I felt that, we're like, why do they say it like that? I'm like, I wouldn't have heard any other way. I needed someone to literally kind of, you know, clap you around the head a little bit and be like, if you don't do that, you're going to feel like this.
And she was, you know, and again, she was a person who had been so kind to me. And so I took that home, literally, and decided to, I don't know, have some sort of ritual. So I put up some photos of Kira, and I lit some candles, and I just talked to her for a couple of hours. And I was like, you know, you've gone, and I didn't ever think that you were going to go, and I love you so much, and thank you so much for everything you did in my life, and it's, you've no idea how painful it's been that you died, but I think maybe I can't carry around this trauma with me in this way every day. And so whatever it means, I'm going to try to let you go in whatever way.
And that doesn't mean you didn't love her.
Yeah, exactly.
It just means like I can't live.
Yeah.
Like people can't live carrying that around that much death.
Yeah.
And I think that's really hard, because you feel like you're betraying them.
Yes.
And you feel like you're saying, I don't
like
love
I was
you.
Choosing to for her to die.
And you're so like, it's not, it's just how you live.
Yeah. And I think something did shift after that then. I think it was like, okay, I think maybe it was me giving myself permission to not be in deep, deep grief anymore. Because I think up to that point, deep grief was like evidence of how much I loved her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't want to admit to anyone else or to myself that her loss was anything other than utter devastation.
Yeah, because it feels like moving on feels like a betrayal of what you felt about them.
Yes,
rather than, of course, you do have days when you feel better and it doesn't hurt as much. Like, and I think I definitely had to do, I'm still doing that, of like preserving the grief and the pain and being like, then we're still there. We're still, they're still sort of here somehow.
Yeah.
And nothing's really moved. And you're almost, which I think is shock as well, you're almost still in the moment you got that phone call. You're almost still there, which is kind of a weird world where they weren't quite dead. So that's, it's just such a process, you know?
Yeah,
and you have to be kind to yourself. Like,
yeah. And it is interesting because you carry it with you. Like, you know, your life gets bigger around it, as you've talked about before. And it was certainly, you know, I still grieved for her for a long time. I'm crying about her now, and it's been over a decade. And you know, we had her 10-year anniversary party, you know, not so long ago. And
so did her mum do that, or with her friends did you decide to
her hear? Mum... her mum did that, and all of her friends. And her mum asked me to MC it. and we had a kind of a gig. You know, and I wept at that as well. And I wrote a poem for Kira about Kira, which I then sort of performed because I cannot sing. And it would have been cruel to the people around us if I had tried to do that. But Kira loved a gig, and so mostly it was bands that she liked performing. Aww. And so I was introducing them with a joke or two, and then I said this poem and stuff. But I got to meet her sister, and got to meet Bronte. And
you got to meet Bronte.
Yeah,
oh my God,
and she does have other half siblings, but Bronte came over. And Bronte is a nurse in Tasmania and has so many of Kira's lovely qualities, like cherubic cheeks. She kind of has her eyes. She has her kindness. She's so sweet. And that was like it was so amazing to meet her. And we've become friends, and that was really cool. And I think now it's settled into a place where I just feel really lucky to have had that love and to have had that love in my life, to have that person who was such a cheerleader. I actually read emails from her last night because I knew we were doing this today. And she was always just so proud of me. And I kind of hadn't done anything at that point. And one of the emails she said, I had obviously been writing to her about Lambda, and she was writing back saying, it all sounds really brilliant. She was like, and she said in the email, I'm so proud of you. I know I say that to you in every email, but I'm just so proud of you. And I was like, God, I was so lucky to have such a cheerleader, and she would love to see what I'm doing now. She'd be so happy to see me on the telly and to watch the stuff I write. And I think that has marked my life as well, just in terms of how grateful I am for the people that I love. And also I'm quite empathetic now. People have lost people because I think I was like, oh, that's sad. Let me know if you need anything. All the useless platitudes. And I think now I'm like, okay, I get it. I mean, I get it wrong sometimes, but.
We all do. I mean, I fucking get it wrong.
That doesn't sound like you, Carrie. I believe you're the princess of grief, queen of grief.
I know.
President of grief.
President of grief. Yeah. No, I have thought something came up today that I had to write to someone, and I thought, and I actually had the thought, oh, I don't know what to say, I won't say anything. And I was like, Carriad?
Yeah.
What? But, you're all totally allowed those thoughts. But pregnant, just, I'm in pieces. I'm in absolute pieces. And I do a lot of these shows, and I'm not always in pieces. But
it's been nice to cry together.
I know, but just the fact that you met Bronte after all that time. And I think there's something, I sound like such a dickhead now, but like the power of love, like family and friends. And when you do, like, I've had this with my nephew, who is half Japanese, so very odd that he looks like my dad, but my God, he looks like my dad. There's this really, I think that's it can be really healing.
Yeah.
And that's not to say if you don't have someone who looks like someone who's died, you're not okay. Like, it's just one of the nice things I can find in the shit. It's like you said, to see someone who has those mannerisms and in a new person who doesn't have any of what they're going through, any of that pain that they had in that different way, and just be like, oh, there you are. Mm. Like, there you are, my old friend.
Yeah.
And that's amazing that, Bronte's still caring in the way that she cared.
It's lovely. And it's been lovely to connect with her Australian family, and I hope to meet more of them someday.
She sounds like a fucking legend.
And it's funny because, it's been very me-centric. I feel like I've really talked about myself a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, we got a lot
But she was just such good fun. And the last person standing at the party, and the friend who'll always call you and stay in touch, and the person who you can say anything to and they won't judge, and the person who'll always have a drink in her hand. And I have this memory came back to me. That's another thing, is that like they feel really precious, because now I'm afraid of losing just like little details of like us walking around the ILAC Centre in Dublin looking for ingredients for a detox that she stuck to for like a day. Or, just like this moment, I remember we went to a comedy gig together. It was so funny. She made such a faux pas. And it was so Kira, just like keep up, like barreling on talking. So she was telling a comic that she really liked a bit of a set, but it wasn't his set, it was another comic. So she was going like, I really love the bit that you do about Irish college. And this comic was going, no, that's not me, that's that other fella. And she's like, no, the bit you do where you say this and you this, and just like doubling down. And this guy just got like increasingly pissed off. And Kira just like, that was so funny.
No, it's fine. I just keep going. And eventually,
I'm sure it was you. I mean, I remember it, so it must have been you.
He'll admit it was his set in a minute. Those moments, like you said, they're so, like, just part of friendship. But it's just, like you said, you don't have to, but it's helpful to move to a place where they just become, like you said, you just feel really grateful that you had them with that person. And it doesn't stop it hurting. It doesn't take away the pain, but it balances the pain, I suppose. It balances you. I think when you first grieve, your pie chart is just pain.
Yeah.
And then slowly the pie chart's like, oh, memories and gratitude that I knew them and, you know, that's made me a better person.
I definitely think it has. And I think it's given me that sense of perspective of, like, if you're stuck in traffic for 2 hours, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Like, someone you love dropping dead is a problem.
Yeah.
And I don't remember that every minute of every day, but I try to pull myself back to that at least once a day. And this other thing of, like, which I think now I'm obviously, you know, Kira never got to be this age and she didn't get to see me married. And I know that she would have had gorgeous little cherubic kids running around by now. But I also think that, like, that thing that we do as humans where people are like, oh my God, it's my birthday. I can't, you know, I don't want to tell anyone what age I am. Like, I just think, be grateful for every year that you get to be on this planet. Like, you know, Kira died at 25, a really good friend of mine, her nephew died this year. He was like 17, 18. Like, friends have lost, like, babies. Like, if you're like worried because there's, you know, because you're like, oh, I don't like this number. Like, you're so lucky to have this extra year with the people that you love. We're all so fucking lucky to have each other. Yeah, so that's definitely something that it helps to come back to you when someone's being really annoying.
We all need something to get through. Bryna, I'm in pieces.
Oh.
She sounds amazing. And what sounds like you're both really lucky to have had each other.
Yeah, we were. And thank you so much, Carrie. I do know I'm a big fan.
I'm in pieces.
Yeah, I'm delighted.
Yeah.
Did your other guests make you cry like this?
No.
Do I get some sort of gold star?
Yeah, I think so.
I love the podcast. I think what you do here is really, really beautiful. I've listened to so many of them and they've really helped and entertained me. And so I'm so grateful to you for doing this. So thank you.
Thank you. Stop as I start crying. You can follow Bryna on Twitter at Bryna C. Titley. Bryna is BronaCTitley. She's very funny on Twitter, so I definitely recommend that you do that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, or you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. If you did enjoy the show, please feel free to rate and review us on iTunes, and also don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. The show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music is provided by The Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.